Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We have another candidate this morning. This is the last in a series of conversations that we've been having in the run-up to next week's election. We picked out some races that are going on here in our coverage area to give voters the chance to talk with the candidates. Reporters, people like me, well, we get to talk to the candidates all the time. But the point of the program is here that it's a chance for voters to call and ask questions. Whatever is most important to you, well, this is your chance to call in, talk to the candidate, say, how do you stand on this, and hear what they have to say. And in this hour, our guest is Naomi Jacobson. She is a two-term Democratic state representative in the 103rd District. This is the district that is essentially the city of Urbana, most of Champaign, a little bit of Savoy. She was first elected to the General Assembly in the fall of 2002. Before that, she served as the Champaign County Recorder for 12 years. Also, she was interim director of a domestic violence shelter and worked as the executive director of the University YWCA. And she's here with us in studio this morning. The two other candidates in this race have already been here on the program. Those interviews are on our website, so if you want to hear them for the first time, you want to hear them again, they are there. And, of course, this program here will also be on the website as well. We want to try to give all the candidates equal access and give listeners equal access as well. So if you want to call in, talk with Naomi Jacobson, 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call, I don't know why it would be, because it's just Champaign-Urbana. But anyway, you want to use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We already have callers ready to go, so I think rather I can ask some questions, but I might as well go ahead and start in and let people talk with you, and we'll take them in the order they came in, and we'll start with line one, and this is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Kostas Fantis, and I work for the University of Illinois. I am very disappointed in state government and the legislature because together they diverted money away from my pension fund to cover budget needs, short-term budget needs. Representative Jacobson supported Senate Bill 27 that essentially raided the pension funds of state university employees and teachers. And this is part of the reason why the Illinois Education Association did not endorse Representative Jacobson. I'm also a member of that union. And I would like to ask, how can I trust you to stand up to the state government against a similar future raid, given your bad record in this matter?
Well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, respond to a couple of things that you've said. You know, since the year 2003, when I first went into the General Assembly, we put $13 billion into the pension system, and that's $4 billion more than was scheduled to be put in by the 1995 law that was passed, requiring us to reach the 90% funding level by the year 2045. And because of this funding, according to a bipartisan Commission on Government Forecasting Accountability, the solvency of the state pension system went from 48% in 2003 when I entered office to 59% this year. When you talk about some of the reasons that you think, you know, I voted for this, let me tell you, I had many teachers the entire time I was in the legislature and, you know, once I was elected and before I was even sworn in, when I was campaigning, come to me and say, we need our early retirement option extended. That was part of Senate Bill 27. So some of those same people that you're talking about had urged me to vote to extend the early retirement option. And, you know, I was able to do that. You mentioned that it had been raided. And I'd like to share with you from the annuitants newsletter. For political purposes, some are saying the pension funds have been raided. First of all, there has been no raid on the pension systems. One common dictionary definition of a raid is an entrance into another's territory for the purpose of seizing goods or valuables. Neither did the governor nor legislature enter the doors of CSRS in the dead of the night to seize any goods, your retirement dollars. I would like to say that I am committed to fully funding our pension system.
thank you. Thank you.
I think it's perfectly fair to quibble with the word like raid, because the General Assembly cannot go in and take money out that's already there. The question I think people have has to do with diversion of funds that they feel should be going into the pension fund. Does it worry you that the state of Illinois has the most unfunded public pension system in the country?
That is something that, you know, certainly I was very concerned about. And that's why when we put that extra $4 billion in, I voted for that, because I want to see our pension system funded.
But I think, again, I think that people are really worried. They're worried about whether or not the promised benefit will be there that they're expecting at the time of their retirement. And when they see the legislature again underfunding, that worries them, that the commitment is just not there for their retirement.
I understand that people are concerned. I mean, this is your livelihood. My husband's a professor here. I have a son who works here. I too am concerned about it. But that is why I was, you know, one of the people who voted to put that extra $4 billion in.
Mm-hmm. Was that something that you, suppose that you actually wanted more money to go in? Is that something that you as an individual legislature really can do anything about? Aren't you really in the position of it comes to you, you can vote yes, you can vote no, but that's essentially the choice that you have?
Well, it comes to me. And yes, I can vote yes, I can vote no. I can also work with my colleagues. I can work together so that we, you know, can get done what we need to do for the state of Illinois.
Let's talk with some other callers. And we have several. These are all folks in Urbana. So the next will be line number two. Hello.
Hi. My question is regarding women's health. A growing problem for women today is diseases attributed to HPV, the human papillomavirus. What have you done to protect women who might suffer from these terrible diseases?
There was a bill that I co-sponsored this past session, and it has become law, that requires insurance companies to cover the costs of mammograms and cervical cancer screening. These are very important, these deadly diseases. If they are detected early, can be treated and save the lives of many women.
The thing that the caller talks about, this particular thing, this vaccine, is now going to be available, and I think it's widely thought that it would really go some way to reducing the incidence of cervical cancer. The problem is that it's expensive.
Right.
And a lot of people are not going to be able to afford it, and maybe some health plans will decide that they're also not going to cover it because, again, it's an expensive item.
Just as I said, you know, we did require this through this bill that I was talking about, require insurance companies to cover the screening for these. I look forward to sponsoring and getting passed into law legislation that will require insurance companies to cover this vaccine because, as you said and as people know, it has been shown to be nearly 100% effective. And yes, it may be costly, but when we can save lives and, you know, save healthcare, other healthcare costs, we're really doing the right thing.
All right. Let's go to line three. This is also someone in Urbana. Hello.
Naomi, I've met you a few times. You come to my door a couple times and to the farmer's market, and I appreciate how accessible you've been to us in the community. I was just wondering, how important is it for you to be accessible, like as far as constituent service? How essential is constituent service to your overall job as a legislator?
Constituent service is so important. Our office here in Champaign, the one that's on North Randolph Street in the old Robeson Building, or if you know it as the new name, the Churchtree Square, is just busy all the time. We get calls, many, many calls every day from constituents. The ways that we're able to help them is just amazing. But you know, I don't wait for people just to pick up the phone and call. They have to know where to do that. They have to know that somebody is in there. And I try to be as available as I possibly can to constituents, whether it's holding town hall meetings or forums, having ice cream socials when the weather is nice, meeting people, as you said, at the farmer's market. But, you know, even when it's not campaign time, I go around and knock on doors and just introduce myself to people, leave my business card and say, you know, is there anything you need? Is there any way I can be of assistance? Because I really believe that's what a full-time legislator is supposed to be doing.
One of your major blocks of constituents, it's the University of Illinois. And I am certain that something that you hear all the time, all legislators, if you have a university in your district, the thing that you're hearing all the time is, we need more money. And probably there's never going to be enough. Are you satisfied with this, the state funding that goes to the University of Illinois? And if I would assume you'd say no, that you're really not completely satisfied, what can you do to increase the amount of state money coming to the university?
You know, I think if we look at what happened while I was in the legislature, before I went to the legislature, the budget to the university had been cut, and it was cut the first year I was there. The first year it was level funded. I went to the leadership. I went to the speaker almost every day. That was the year we were in overtime. Mm-hmm. And I let him know how important the university is, how this flagship university has to maintain that. And, we can't let it slide. And so that year that it was level funded, sure, that wasn't an increase. It wasn't great, but it was much better than having a cut. And this year, when it was time to work on the budget, I looked at what the Illinois Board of Higher Education proposed. I looked at what the university had proposed. And I took that to leadership and, again, really pressed for that to happen. And when I met with one of the budgeteers one day, he said, you're the first rep who's asked me, has asked for this. And so I really believe that having a strong person, a strong representative from here, stand up for the university. The university is our economic engine. It's a flagship university. Our students deserve the best education they can possibly get. And when they come here, that's what they expect, and that's what they should get. It's very important to me. Both of my degrees are from the U of I. I've taught on this campus. My husband is a professor here. I value this. So when I'm in Springfield, it's not just that I represent this area, but this is my university, just as it's, your university. We're sitting here in this great facility, and it's the university of all the students and the faculty and staff.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people that say, you're a Democrat, the governor's a Democrat, the legislature's controlled by Democrats. You guys are all on the same team. And yet at the same time, during the last few years particularly, I think a lot of people feel that in the budgeting process, the U of I has somehow got slighted. I think that they feel underappreciated by Springfield.
Well, I think that that's one of the jobs that I have, is to make sure that people understand and appreciate the University of Illinois. This is, as I said, our flagship university. And when I'm in Springfield, I serve on two higher ed committees, higher education and appropriations for higher ed. And I do spend a lot of time in those committees trying to help my colleagues understand the importance of the university. Of course, the people who serve on these higher ed committees are interested in higher ed, and some of them represent other areas where there are state universities and state colleges. But, when I'm over there talking to them, I let them know how important this is, just as I do when we're talking about community colleges. I let them know that, Parkland College is probably one of the best community colleges in the state.
Hmm. Our guest this morning is Naomi Jacobson. She is a Democratic state representative in the Illinois General Assembly. She represents the 103rd District. She was first elected in the fall of 2002. She is running for re-election. We have had now all the candidates in the 103rd here on the show. If you have questions, we certainly want to give you the chance to talk with the candidate. 333-9455 is the number. Back to the calls here. Line 1, Urbana. Hello?
Hi, I have a quick question. 1, who's your personal hero? And 2, what do you like better, Champaign, Urbana, or Springfield?
Personal hero. I have a lot of a lot of people I look up to. If I were to choose one, since I'm here as a state representative, I'll think of it in terms of political heroes. I'll say Paul Simon, Senator Paul Simon.
Oh, good choice. good choice.
And what do I
think? I don't know. That's sort of tough. You like better Champaign or Banner, Springfield?
Yeah. When I'm in Springfield, it really is exciting to work with all of the representatives from around the state and meet them. You know, we have such a diverse state. It really is. I mean, just when you hear people talk from the southern part of Illinois, when they're relaxed, you know, they have their southern draws. And their issues are things that, you know, I might not have been thinking of. And when I meet people from the other parts of the state, it's fun and it's exciting. And it's good to go to them and work together on bills that, you know, we can work together on, whether it's the environment or health care and certainly education. But, you know, when I'm back home and I can work with constituents and meet with them on almost a daily basis, whether it's, you know, in the constituent office or out in the community, that's really, I think, a great thing. It's just wonderful to be able to serve the constituents.
Well, let's talk with someone else. This is Urbana Line 2. Hello.
Hi. I'm a student, and like last semester, my textbooks were like $600. I was just wondering if there's anything you can do about textbook prices and if there's anything else you could do to help students.
I did introduce legislation that would have reduced the cost of textbooks. And, you know, I want to continue to work on that because I have heard from many students about the tremendous cost of textbooks. And that's something that is certainly a concern to me. I don't want students to have to stand in line at the bookstores and decide whether or not they're going to be able to get everything that their faculty and professors have recommended that they get. It is something that I have worked on. I want to continue to work on it because students really need to have the availability of those. But I guess the other thing that I've done for students, of course, as I mentioned, $12 million new for the University of Illinois, but we increased the funding for the MAP program this year. MAP is the Monetary Assistance Program. And we want to make sure that students have all of the resources available to them that they should have so that they can get, so that you can get the quality education that you deserve.
Well, what can the General Assembly do about the price of textbooks?
The legislation that I was introducing was looking at the possibility of unbundling textbooks. I don't know if you're aware of what I'm talking about, but very often when a student goes to buy a textbook that's on the list, they're bundled together, physically bundled, you know, with some kind of shrink wrap around them. And many times they don't need all of the things that are in that package.
Isn't that up to the professor who decides what books are going to be assigned to the class?
Yeah, but the professor doesn't order them bundled necessarily.
I see.
And this is the way they come, you know, to the bookstore. So it's something that we need to work on.
All right. Well, let's go on to another caller. This is line 3, and it is Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. I was told I was on line number 2, and line number 2 just asked the question.
Well, my apologies. Well, you're on now, so go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I want to ask more on university funding, if that's okay. I know, David, you just asked about it.
Well, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to be more clear. The university over the past 6 years has had about $100 million of recurring funds cut out of the budget. The overall budget for this campus is $3 billion, and the budget for the entire university system, I believe, is about $4 billion. And right now the state's picking up about 25% of that tab, I believe, somewhere around that area. And so the $12 million, while it's very welcome for this year, is certainly doesn't make up for the budget cuts that have happened in recurring funds, nor does it really, it's a sort of a drop in the bucket when you think of a $4 billion budget. The other thing I want to mention is that the overall budget for higher education in the state, that's for the Eastern, Southern, et cetera, Illinois State University has been cut. So again, In terms of the University of Illinois campus at Urbana-Champaign, this has had some real impacts, these overall budget cuts, as well as some of the policies on tuition. For example, the number of African-American students who are enrolled has gone down both as a percentage and in real terms. The number of students from downstate has declined. The only increase in students actually at the university within Illinois has been from the color county. So we're seeing a real impact on our student body from these consistent budget cuts and a limiting of access to the university. And I want to put that out there on the table. There's sort of some real numbers out there. And the other thing I want to do, I'm a Green Party supporter, and the reason I'm a Green Party supporter is that I believe that public education should be publicly funded. And I just don't see, you know, President Joe White at a recent campus event, who's president of the university, said that, I hope I quote him correctly, said that the university is on its own, that Springfield has spoken in terms of state funding. And I really want to see that turn around. And I don't see the Democratic Party, the past four years, if or any record, has actually done that. So I am supporting the Green Party in hopes that can begin to turn to make the politics of Springfield more for public funding of public education. So if you could respond to that, and I'm sorry if I overlapped on what you already asked, David.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. Naomi?
Thank you. You talked about the last 6 years, and, you know, the earlier of those years were prior to my being in the state legislature, and the cuts then were deeper than when I went into the legislature. And as I said, we were able to get $12 million for the University of Illinois. And sure, that's not a huge amount in the overall budget, but an increase is better than level funding. An increase is better than a cut. Do I think it's enough? No. I want to continue to work on increasing the budget to the University of Illinois. The $12 million was for the operating budget. We were also able to get about $48 million for capital, and that is for construction and renovation. And for people who have been in, just as an example, Lincoln Hall, you know that there is renovation definitely needed in there, and some of that money is used towards the plan for Lincoln Hall's renovation. These are areas that I will continue to work on. We need to make sure that students are able to come here from all over the state. That's why we increase the funding for the MAP program. We want to make sure that regardless of where students are from or what their background, their ethnic, racial background is, that they can get into the university and have the resources that they need to be able to help them be students here at the U of I.
Hmm. I guess I go back to the idea that whatever commitment you have, and I'm sure that's sincere and solid to the university, that you're only one legislator. And I think that there are people who across Illinois who are really concerned that state government doesn't have the commitment to funding education at all levels that it should. You know, the Constitution says something about the state of Illinois is supposed to be the majority funder for public schools. Some people think that means that it ought to be at least 51%. Other people say, well, no, that isn't really what it means. So we can argue about what that means, but I think that what people would not argue about is the feeling that the state is not doing its share.
I understand what people are saying, and I realize that there have been these cuts. Unfortunately, you know, Illinois is not the only state where the funding is being cut to higher education. That isn't an excuse for Illinois. I'm not trying to say that, you know, we should follow the pattern of other states. But I am only one legislator, but when I am in Springfield and can work with my colleagues from across the state, you know, a lot of them are alums of the University of Illinois, and I try to find those people and remind them of that and say, you know, just as it was a great place for you and you got your education there, we want to make sure that the upcoming potential students of the U of I still have that same great opportunity.
Let me ask you a school funding question since we're sort of talking about that. And it's something that's come up, I think, in all the other conversations I've had with candidates. And it's something, as I know people will hear, I've said this before, as long as I can remember, people, whether they're in the General Assembly, most of them at least downstaters, or people who are running, have said they think that we ought to move away from property taxes as being the thing that funds public schools, you know, elementary, secondary education, that we ought to do that and that we probably should move to an income tax with some kind of provision to give people a break on their – some kind of offset on their property tax so that most people don't end up actually paying more at the end of the day. Year after year, I've had people in here saying, oh, that's a great thing. I'm all for that. We have commissions that say that's a great thing. We should do that. Well, it seems that it's just politically not doable in Springfield. Assuming that you think that this would be a good idea, how do you make that happen?
Well, actually, I have not been a supporter of the recent proposals that are out there. Unfortunately, they're often labeled as a tax swap, and it's not a swap. I looked at the average incomes here in this district, and looked at what the rebate would be. The average household homeowner would get about a $300 rebate on the tax bill, on the property tax bill. And their income tax, if they're a two-income family, would go up about $2,000. That's hardly a swap. I have had, some people, of course, come to me and say, this is a good idea. But then when I point that out to them, they're just stunned. They didn't realize that the amount that the property tax would be rebated and the amount of the increase in the income tax was so, far apart. And I do believe that we need to increase the funding for education for K-12. That's why, since I've been in there, we have increased it by $1.5 billion. We've increased the foundation level so that the foundation level now is about $5,330 per student per year. Yes, we need to make sure that our children are getting the quality education that they need, that they deserve. My children all went to public schools here. I have some grandchildren in the public schools. And it's not just for me, but it's for all the children. And it's for everybody, because we need to educate these children so that as they become adults and productive citizens, they have had the opportunities that they've needed to have.
Well, let's say the general principle of going away from the property tax and going increasingly toward an income tax, assuming that you could fix it so that it would be a greater rebate on the property tax. So you could say to people, okay, you're not going to actually be paying more taxes. I mean, what do you think about the general principle of moving away from the property tax?
One of the problems with this and some of the people, who are saying that there's a real disparity between school districts, and I know that there is, part of the bill that's been out there and being proposed, part of it says that if it was going to become law, for the first fiscal year, each school district shall receive a minimum property tax relief grant in an amount equal to 20% of the total property taxes reported. So school districts are still going to get back according to their property tax income. So I don't see how it's going to solve the disparity.
So then you point to what is the thing that a lot of people point to as the big problem. You have some districts, they're very wealthy. They put a lot of money behind their students. And then you have other districts where the people aren't as fortunate to have the resources to tax, particularly downstate and also in Cook County. They don't have as much money to put behind the students. So there's this big gulf between the richer districts and those that are less well off. What can you do? What can the legislature do to try to at least narrow that gulf?
Right. That's why we need to keep increasing the foundation level. And we have increased it, since I've been there. And as I said, it's now up to $5,330 approximately.
Yeah. But then when you look at those districts that are best off, it's incredibly incredibly higher than that. I mean, it's we're really talking about an enormous mm-hmm. gulf between the richest and the least affluent districts.
Well, unfortunately, I think even as we continue to increase the foundation level, the rich districts are still rich.
Mm-hmm. So just I just want to make sure I understand where you're coming from on this. Again, for those people who make this argument, well, we really ought to get away from the property tax, ought to go to the income tax, and that would really solve the problem, would deal with the inequities. You just question the basic assumption about whether or not that would do what we would want it to do.
I think it will help the lower income areas, but it's not going to end the inequities because those that already have such a high income area, they're going to make sure that they keep pouring their money into their schools.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll talk with some more callers here. Line one, Champaign. Hello. Is there a caller there in Champaign, line one?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I've been working in the Champaign-Urbana area for a year and a half, and one of the things I like is the low cost of living. And one of the things I'm worried about is this upcoming energy rate hike that the News Gazette has been reporting a lot about. And my concern is some elected officials are supporting the energy company's plan to spread out the rate hike over 3 years. And I know there's a interest rate that will be tacked on that for about 6.5%. And right now I'm paying mortgage payments, I'm paying car payments. The last thing I want to do is pay another 6.5% in interest on my energy bills, which will only fatten the profits of the electric companies and help their CEOs make tens of millions more. Is that something that you're supporting, the company's proposal to spread the energy cost, or do you have another plan?
Thank you. This is something that I've been working on for about a year. Almost a year ago, I put my name on as a co-sponsor to a piece of legislation that would freeze the electric rates until the year 2010, because we need to have a competitive market. And I think when we're looking at the competitive market, we need to make sure that we're looking at some of the new possibilities, too, for bringing in the competition. Renewable resources, such as wind energy and solar energy. And, we're sitting here on this campus where there is such great research going on in renewable resources. There's a plant in particular, I remember the name of it, it's called Miscanthus, that there's been a lot of research done on that would provide renewable resources, renewable energy. And that's very important that we move in that direction and have a competitive market, including the renewable energy resources. I held a press conference almost a year ago together with AARP and CUB and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers on this bill. I've talked to so many people, especially seniors and people on fixed incomes, who are really worried about staying in their homes if these rates go up. 40 to 45% at one time, or as the caller pointed out, if they're spread out, it's you and me who are going to be paying an interest rate for allowing them to be spread out. The utility companies are making money. I don't have a problem with a company making money. That's what they're in business for. But when they're, making such enormous amounts of money and then just want to pass on some additional rates to the customers, I think we need to go back and look at that and freeze those rates while we work on the competition. There's another whole problem that has come to my attention, and that's with the winter electric rates. The utility companies several years ago, offered the opportunity to customers if they would heat with electricity, they'd get a lower rate in the winter months. Well, a lot of people invested in new systems to be able to heat their homes with electricity. And if these rates go into effect for those people, they're going to see enormous jumps in their bills. So I'm even looking at, you know, ways to maybe extend. Well, I want to see the freeze extended.
Hmm. Let's talk about that again for a little bit more for a minute, just because 10 years ago in 1997, the General Assembly, and you weren't there at the time, the General Assembly passed this utility deregulation law. The claim was that it would open up, particularly for residential customers, the possibility of competition that would mean lower rates. At the same time, however, to get the legislators to go along with this, they cut and capped the rates for 10 years. And what we're talking about now is the fact that in January, the cap is due to come off. I think that there are people who would argue that the reason that there is no competition in the residential market now after 10 years is that the rates were frozen. And if you continue that rate freeze for another 3 years, there's not going to be any more competition in 2010 than there is now.
I think if we freeze the rates so we can bring in competition, you know, larger users do have competition, and they have the option of choosing their providers. We need to do that for the smaller user. You know, it's not just the individual homeowners that I've talked to. Business people are really worried, small businesses, about their electrical rates. Yesterday I was visiting an adult daycare center. And, you know, the individuals, of course, who were there were concerned about their rates. But then I looked at one of the women who works in this adult daycare center, and I said, so what about a place like this? I mean, their rates are going to go up too. Services that are provided to our people, to the citizens, you know, all over. But when I think of right here in Champaign-Urbana and the numbers of, you know, families who count on places like an adult daycare center mm-hmm. for their senior members to be able to get out and be with other people during the day.
Devastating. I don't mean to be arguing for higher power rates. I don't like that idea any more than anybody else. But I guess that, again, there's some people would say, well, yeah, you're right. There is, in fact, competition for the big industrial users. And the reason there's competition there is that these big industrial users use an enormous amount of power, and the power companies can actually make money selling to them. The reason that there's no competition in the residential market is that, again, because the rates are low and we pay on the average less per kilowatt hour than the rest of the country, power companies can't make any money because the rates are kept artificially low. And again, they would say, well, you know, you just continue that for another 3 years. The situation is going to be no different. There's going to be no more competition in 2010 than there is now.
Power companies are making money. In 1997, Ameren made about $335 million. And in 2005, they made $628 million. They're making money. I saw in the paper a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't see it for Ameren, but I saw ComEd CEO makes $27 million a year. they're making money.
Right. So it looks like probably after the election this is going to come up. Do you think this is going to in the veto session this freeze proposal is going to come up for a vote?
It's my goal.
All right. And if you're no matter what happens, you'll still be there. You would vote for that freeze for another 3 years.
Yes.
All right. Let's go on here. We'll talk next with line number 2, I think, in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Are you supporting any initiatives to increase recycling for tenants?
Yes, I did introduce legislation that would help landlords get a tax rebate if they provided recycling for their tenants, because we've seen here in Urbana such a great participation in the recycling. And I know people in Champaign recycle. And so if landlords are able to provide that for their tenants, I think it would be a great thing. The environment has been one of my priorities in recycling. I mean, if anybody's known me all my life, my kids would know. My children would tell you that, our mother was a reuse, recycle person. And, I think as a responsible citizen, that's good to do. But when we can help make it easier and make it possible for landlords or anyone throughout the state. You know, last year I one of the things I do is I go around and talk to schools if teachers, you know, want to have me come in, and I do how a bill becomes law session with students, depending on the age of the student or very little ones, I might just read to them. But I held a create a bill contest, and one of the proposals came from a fifth grader at Kenwood School in Champaign. Her idea was that we should pass a law that would require school cafeterias to recycle. Well, we didn't put that into legislation, but I did have a resolution drafted from that encouraging schools in their cafeterias to recycle. I didn't put it in a law because it would have been an unfunded mandate, but I thought it was so good that this little fifth grader wanted to see some recycling in the schools beyond what they already do. I think they do recycle paper, but to have recycling in the cafeteria. So, you know, we did pass this, adopt this resolution.
All right, let's go to line three. This is also Urbana. Hello.
Hello. What is your position on meaningful electoral reform? Would you, for instance, favor an absolute and lower limit on individual contributions, a prohibition of contributions from corporate entities and labor unions? What would be your position on instant runoff?
On campaign contributions, I believe that was your first part of your question.
Yes.
You know, I think that it's important for candidates to file electronically, because if they file electronically, then those are available for the public to look at. And one can always see where contributions are coming from. And I have not said that I think that, you know, unions shouldn't be able to contribute to a campaign, or, you know, people pay into those and they decide where they want, whether they want to pay into that campaign fund. They decide who the candidates are. And I believe that, you know, that money really does come from individuals. But I think when they contribute that way, they feel like they have a greater voice rather than their smaller amount, their smaller dollars just going to the candidate of their choice.
What about corporations? Those are not willing. For instance, I own stock, and I'm often opposed to the way I'm sure they're contributing.
Well, I think, you know, if a corporation is contributing to a campaign, it should be very transparent. Everyone should know who the contributors are. And if the candidate feels that there's, for some reason, you know, a conflict or doesn't want to accept that money, then the candidate should return it.
Well, that sounds pretty laissez-faire, and it doesn't seem to approach the problems we have with huge election costs and tremendous contributions from very rich contributors. What about government funding of elections? That's being done in several states.
Well, I did sign as a co-sponsor for the, I can't think of the name of it right now, but it
I think it's
would
clean
have to
election.
Do with clean elections, yes, and that has to do with judges. And I did sign on as a co-sponsor to that.
Do you think it would be a good across the board?
Well, it's a good idea, and I would be interested to see what the legislation is.
What about instant runoff?
I think the system that we have now works.
Well, your backers are complaining about spoilers, and this would eliminate the problem with spoilers, if there is one.
Well, I think I'm just going to say that I think that the way you know, our elections are run now, the way they're counted, it seems to work.
Well, it doesn't seem to me they work. We had two presidential elections which appeared to have been complete failures. we have a situation in Texas where redistricting midterm and extreme gerrymandering have resulted in one party gaining, what was it, 7 seats in Congress. We seem to have some really serious problems with our elections.
Well, boundaries...
Most of the Europeans, I would point out, are using instant runoff.
I think when you talk about districts, that's different from voting and from the election.
We have a situation here in Urbana where one party crossed and backed the other party's candidate for the county board, so that it frustrated the electoral process. I don't think this can be called clean elections, and it seems to me that instant runoff would be one mechanism to cure this problem.
Well, I think that, you know, people are allowed to vote in any primary that they choose to vote in Illinois. People are not locked into a particular party. And in that case, those people chose to vote in the primary that they thought would have the best candidate.
We're coming down to the point. We have a couple of minutes left. I just want to ask a direct question. Here in the state of Illinois, there are no limits on how much money one may give to a candidate. Do you think that's the way it should be?
I realize there aren't any limits, but again, I think that it's important that we do what we do have is a transparent, you know, we should be able to see who is contributing to our campaigns throughout the state. And when we, you know, when we limit campaign contributions, then I guess people are feeling that they, you know, a lot of people who give a lot of money to one candidate also give a lot of money to another candidate. So I think some of these big dollars that you're talking about are distributed.
Well, some of them also are coming in big chunks from parties. For example, in the 52nd Senate here in which we're sitting, it's somebody has estimated that total spending on this race could get to $2 million. And I'm confident that most of that money did not come from individuals in the 52nd Senate. It came from the state Republican and Democratic parties. What about the idea of limiting spending from outside of the district?
Well, I think when you talk about limiting spending from outside the district, you know, does that mean that somebody who lives a few blocks from me but is not in the district but is my friend, I've known them for years, we've had a good relationship, that they can't contribute to my campaign? I'm not sure that limiting money from outside the district is the right way to go. When you talk about a large group contributing money, whether it's the party or an organization, that money comes from individuals. Both parties, people contribute to their party to see that the money gets you. You know, they contribute to the political campaign, whatever it's called, and the larger party, and they know when they contribute to it that they're helping their party support some candidate down the line somewhere. And so I'm sure that a lot of people from the 52nd district have contributed to either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party of Illinois. And so the smaller amounts that they've contributed are coming back in those larger dollars.
All right. Let's go to at least one more. And it's Urbana. Next, line one.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
I'm still trying to make up my mind about this race, and I was wondering if Naomi could summarize some of the endorsements she's gotten.
Well, thank you. I've gotten the Illinois Federation of Teachers, AFL-CIO, Planned Parenthood, Personal PAC, League of Conservation Voters, the Sierra Club, and both of those are environmental groups, the Farm Bureau, the Champaign County Farm Bureau, and Well, there are probably a couple more. I'm just drawing a blank. I didn't bring a list with me.
We're just about the point we're going to have to finish, and my apologies. We have a couple of callers that we can't take. Any last thing that you would like to say, something about some particular issue that we haven't discussed or anything that we have discussed?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for this opportunity. I know you've had all of the candidates on, and it gives people a chance to call in and ask their questions if they haven't been able to make it to some of the forums. And you do a great job of providing that opportunity. I want to continue to make the environment, affordable, accessible health care, and education my priorities, and make sure that we are doing the right thing for the citizens of this district.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Naomi Jacobson, she is a Democratic candidate for the Illinois General Assembly. She's actually now a two-term state representative. She was first elected in the fall of 2002 and is running again for re-election next week. Her opponents in the race have both been here on the program, and you can find those interviews on our website if you want to hear them. And this will be on the website as well.